Live from the Business Radio X studio in Atlanta, it's time for Organization Conversation, brought to you by Wall Control Storage Systems. Wall Control gives you the storage and organization you crave. Now, here's your host, Richard Grove.
Welcome back to Organization Conversation. We've got a good episode today for you. We wanted to take a little time and do a partner focus where we highlight a partner we work closely with, and in this case, very closely with, and give them the pedestal and let them talk about their expertise and the offerings that they have for their customers using art so our audience can hear it and letting this be a platform for them. So probably our closest partner is DeKalb Tool & Die. DeKalb Tool & Die, we affectionately refer to as our parent company, even though they're a completely separate entity from Wall Control. And usually, if you follow along on our Instagram or anywhere on social media, you typically get a lot of behind the scenes of Wall Control being manufactured in their plants and just some basically how DeKalb Tool & Die applies to Wall Control. And DeKalb Tool & Die does a whole lot more than just Wall Control. We manufacture all sorts of things across many different industries and provide all sorts of tool and die servicing. So we wanted to highlight that today because they are certainly our closest partner. Wall Control was born in the shop of DeKalb Tool & Die, and my guest today is actually my dad. Welcome, Dad.
Hey, thanks. Good to have you with me.
Yeah. So my dad's name is Rick, and I'm Richard, so don't get confused if we start saying names. But so to kick things off, can you give a little bit of history of DeKalb Tool & Die, how it started, and what type of work, I guess, it started out doing, and then how it's evolved over the years?
Sure, absolutely. DeKalb Tool & Die started in 1968, founded by a gentleman who actually came from another shop that was a partnership of several fellows. In fact, all of Tool & Die out of the Atlanta area came out of that one shop. John Brown started DeKalb Tool & Die in 1968 as a tool and die manufacturer, mostly servicing the automotive industry at that time. Since then, over 50 years, we've grown to be a full service die design, build, repair, maintain, along with production, die stamping, production stamping, and as well as 5-axis laser. So we consider ourselves to be a full service tool and die metalworking facility, and actually have capacities that are rather large for this region. Some of the stuff that we're able to do, if you didn't come to us, you'd end up going somewhere in Michigan, Ohio, somewhere up north. So we have some fairly large capacity, which creates a little niche for us. That gives us a little bit of a leg up over some of the other places in the region.
Yeah. How did that evolve? So when DeKalb Tool & Die started, was it just building dies and then got into stamping? And how was the progression?
John, our owner, is a die builder, die maker. From what I hear, was a pretty good one too. But we started out just building dies. What happened in the die industry is that press time for production places is a premium. And when you build a die, it has to be tried out, proven to make a good part. And typically in those days, you carried the die to the manufacturer, you put it in their press, and you proved it out and you tried it out. That got to be where they wouldn't allow you to have that press time anymore. So you ended up having your own presses in your shop. So as we acquired these presses and created this production-like environment, these presses, which are rather large expenses, would sit unused for large periods of time while you waited for another tool to be finished. So the common sense thing says, what can we do with these when we're not using them for tool and die? So we started seeking out stamping work. As we got into it, some of the requirements for stamping required that upgrades in equipment, upgrades in support. For instance, we are ISO 9000 registered, which is a quality registration that you need to have to stamp for some houses. So it morphed into a stamping tool and die and stamping facility. From there, we got into, because we had big equipment, we were making big parts, and some of those parts required trim, which led us into 5-axis laser. We now have 2 5-axis lasers. We're bringing in a third one this year, where we do some very large draws and do 5-axis laser to avoid having to build trim tool for it.
And what does it look like as far as industry evolution over the years? I know DeKalb Tool used to do a lot more automotive, it seemed, and now it's transitioned into, there's HVAC, there's all sorts of industries that right. You're stamping for and building tools for. So Can you speak to that at all? And also, where do you see it going? It's funny because you think like tool and die, metal stamping has probably always been the same, but I've seen it evolve a lot just since I've been around.
Oh, absolutely.
From the type of work you take and quote or don't take, and then leaning heavier on repair, that kind of thing.
You're probably way too young to remember this, but back in the 50s and 60s, car models changed every year. I mean, what they built in 1957 didn't look like what they built in 1958 and so on. So there was a lot of tooling being built to create these different models every year. And so automotive was large. It was a huge part of our business then. And that's pretty much where we staked our claim. But what happened is as automotive industry started to change in the 70s, early 70s, both in how long models stayed current and as well as offshoring, that business started to go away. And you had to seek out other work, either that or die. We basically decided we're not going to just fill our shop with automotive. What we're going to do is we're going to seek out other industries. And at that time, we started bringing in things like outdoor products, lawnmower decks, rotor tiller parts. We started seeking out, we were doing satellite dishes. We were doing HVAC, like you said, home goods, lighting industry, for us, fluorescent lighting industry. So there were a lot of other opportunities that were coming about, especially as manufacturing in the South and in Atlanta particularly started to broaden. When we started out in automotive, a lot of the work was being done for places outside of Atlanta and outside of Georgia. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of industry in Georgia. A lot of industries come to the South, to Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina, Alabama, and a lot of opportunities. We've adapted, changed a little bit. The thing is, as these industries have grown, I'll take outdoor products, for instance. It used to be in outdoor products in the early days that the requirements for the parts weren't like they are today, because what's happened is all of these engineers who got trained in the automotive industry started branching out and going to other places, and all of a sudden you started seeing lawnmowers with ridiculous tolerances or very tight tolerances to be held that weren't there before. Precision within the industry has gone basically across the board, but you wouldn't think it's there. Mm-hmm. But even in things like HVAC, home goods, the tolerances and requirements are much tighter than they used to be. And for that reason, equipment has changed. The way you make them has changed. Most of all of our work is done on CNC machines, CNC mills, wire DMs. And that's a product of the requirements of the customer, as well as the decline in skilled labor.
Yeah. Speaking of decline in skilled labor, where do you see that going? That's a challenge. I think about that a lot for DeKalb Tool and Die. That's probably the biggest threat. Aside from slowing economy and lack of work, I think it's more just not having the people to get the jobs done.
In fact, I get auction brochures weekly of places very similar to us that are no longer in business. And when you get those things, it makes you at least stop and think, okay, how'd that go wrong? Because you can look at an auction sheet and say, that's a reflection of our business. They have the same machines we have. They do the same things we do. What went wrong? And part of it is, like you say, the economy. And part of it is just the fact that there's not a workforce there. Just in the past 3 weeks, I visited four different people within 50 miles of our facility that do work that we're very capable of doing. And I've not talked to them in 50 years because they've had other sources. And the sources are now gone. Mm-hmm. By attrition, that's one of the reasons I think that. But to your point, as far as labor goes, I think there's a couple of things to blame. Mostly we as a society are the biggest ones to blame. The government, of course, I think is to blame. The solution has always been throw money at it. Mm-hmm. And that's my big beef with the minimum wage. Mm-hmm. Minimum wage was never intended to be a livable income. It's where you start. And then your initiative makes you want to make more, learn something, do something better, something that pays better. But instead of doing that, we just keep raising the minimum wage and don't encourage anybody to look somewhere else for another skill set. I think that, and coming out of a generation where if you didn't go to four-year college, you failed. But the thing that I think young people need to understand when you talk about a skilled trade is you're not actually born with that. You have to learn that.
That's a super obvious point, but when you hear it, that's the problem. People, I just don't think they can see themselves doing something that they don't know anything about, but that's not a reason to not start.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't think anybody ever grew up wanting to go to elementary school now, go to any school and say, hey, what do you want to do when you grow up? No one says, oh, I want to make steel parts.
You know? Yeah.
But it's a very good income and a very strong, I guess, in a bad economy, you can find work anywhere.
Yeah, there's nobody.
I could take my guys who are skilled, send them to any city, and they'd have work within 24 hours.
Yeah.
Because they have a skill set that other people don't have. But you're right. You don't think of yourself as being able to do it. And none of these people who are doing it now could when they started.
Right. Well,
it's like anything else. You don't go play tennis because you're really good at it. You go learn to play. You go play tennis. So I think if we're encouraging people to learn a skill set, and I think there's a very good income for them. We have very little turnover at our place. Most of the people there have been there 20 years or better. I work with people there who've been there for 35 or 40 years. And I can tell you this, they're not there just because that's where they can make the most money.
Mm-hmm.
I think as an employer, if you ask what the future is, I think as an employer, if you encourage people with letting them know how important they are to you, that they have a value that's beyond the labor that they're giving you, give them a sense of appreciation. You can, money will make them happy for a little while, but then they'll need more money.
Mm-hmm.
Fear is a poor motivator.
Yeah.
The greatest motivator is to let somebody know that you appreciate what they do. I think the combination of encouraging people to learn something. I have people come to me starting out, and I went to a high school for career day.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to young people, and they tell me, I can make that kind of money at McDonald's. And that's a product of some of the things that we're doing as a government in size. I say, you sure can. And in 10 years, you'll still be doing that at McDonald's, where if you'll come do this, in 8 years, you'll have a skilled trade.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be making three or four times the money, and you can go anywhere you want. If you don't like us, you can go anywhere you want and apply that trade.
Yeah.
I think that I'm not giving up. There's still hope.
Yeah.
And I think that as a society, if we'll stop keep throwing money at minimum wage and encouraging people not to learn anything, I think we can create a workforce that's viable. And again, machine tools are doing a lot of that work that skilled trades used to do, but there's still a need.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this and you're in Atlanta or somebody in Atlanta who's looking to learn something new, then please reach out, because we definitely want eager hands and folks to learn the trades and to get in there and help us out. How long does it take? What's like the progression of like apprentice to journeyman? Like how long does that normally take? So if somebody knows nothing, they're 20 years old and they want to start learning, what's that sort of education curve look like?
You're not going to believe me when I tell you this, but the largest hurdle in the last 5 years is just somebody who'll come to work every day on time and want to work.
Yeah.
Okay? If I can find somebody who wants to do that.
Yeah.
And has just a little bit of a mechanical inclination.
Mm-hmm.
We can take and turn that into a very skilled craftsman.
Yeah.
The biggest problem I have right now is people who will just show up willing to work.
Mm-hmm.
If you do the kind of work we do, you work with your hands.
Yeah. You have to be there on time. It's like a team sport, basically. You can't operate all by yourself, and you're going to let the team down if you're not there pulling your weight.
Absolutely. And I went to one of these, or NOS was actually a technical school career day, and I could have filled a bus with people who wanted to program our machines, but I couldn't find one who wanted to run it.
Yeah.
And the thing I couldn't convince them is you'll make more money running it than you will programming it.
Yeah.
Because it's a skill that other people don't have. Yeah. I'd encourage anybody who's looking to make a career move is not necessarily, I guess, the fit for a 4-year school.
Yeah.
And is looking for a skilled trade. Come to work every day. Show us that you want to be there. Show a little bit of aptitude toward it and that you care about it. And we actually start training. We used to have a formal apprentice program, but what happens is if you actually do that affiliated with a government program, then there's so many requirements that the government has.
Yeah. And it's not a necessity anymore.
No.
There's so few that you don't need to,
right.
You know.
Exactly. What we do is we attach someone who's capable with a skilled craftsman and they work with him and work technically for him. And he gives them tasks to do. And as their abilities increase, the tasks increase. So when you ask, it could be that in 2 or 3 years, they're the equivalent of that person as far as their ability, raw abilities. It could be that it's shorter, could be that it's longer. It all depends on how quickly they take and learn the tasks that they're doing. But none of it is beyond the mind of most young people. One of the things that obviously we see is a great influx in minority participation. very hardworking, want to learn, want to make, increase their income, want to increase their value in the marketplace. So that's been a great resource for us. And I think that will continue. But there's a whole generation of people out there who are having a hard time finding their way as far as what they want to do.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you this, and if you're out there listening, there's not an easy way.
Yeah.
All of it involves responsibility and hard work. Mm-hmm. When you look around at people who are successful, they didn't just land in their lap. They came to work every day and they applied themselves and turned it into something. Those are the people we're looking for, and we have a place for them.
Yeah. I'm excited about it. And to the point of the young people looking for things, and everybody wants to go into tech and be a programmer, and everybody's moving in a certain direction, and it's a really good opportunity to go in a different direction. And that's what I would encourage people to consider. I'm actually excited for DeKalb Tool and Die because there's a lot of opportunity in, like you said, there's a lot of consolidation happening. At the end of the day, stuff has to get made. You have to make things. You can't just program it. It can't all be tech. There has to be stuff in the physical world. And we're focused on that. And I think if other folks, young folks, would focus on that, they could really make a name for themselves in that space that is becoming less and less crowded. That's what I would encourage people to do. Consider the alternatives. You hear what all your friends are doing and the direction everybody's moving in. And usually it's a good idea to not move in the direction that everyone else is in. Go do something a little bit different. And this is a really good place for it.
Yeah. And again, a lot of responsibility is going to fall upon the employer. There's everybody in manufacturing is dealing with the same problems, mm-hmm. the same root problems. And the way that you're going to attract and retain good people is to be a good employer. And I think that's where the responsibility is going to come. That part of that falls on DeKalb Tool and Die. We need to make mm-hmm. sure that what we're offering to people is better than what's being offered somewhere else. And again, that's not always money. That's understanding that this is a job. It isn't your life. Other things go on that require your attention. We're working at being the best possible option for people who are looking to make a career out of Tool and Die. And we're a good house. We have mm-hmm. Outstanding reputation. We've had an outstanding reputation for 50 years. We build good tools. We stand behind what we build. And we certainly appreciate the business of the people who seek us out.
Yeah. So to that point, so we can talk on the customer side of things, what would the ideal DeKalb Tool and Die customer look like these days? So used to be it was quoting big tooling packages for automotive. And how has that shifted to the point where when someone comes to you looking for a job to get done, what's that ideal customer look like?
To be honest, right now, probably over half of our work is not new build. It's mm-hmm. maintenance, it's repair, it's engineering change. So there's a lot of people who have tooling built offshore. I used to begrudge that. And if you mm-hmm. had it built there, don't bring it to me to fix it. And I realized I was just cutting off my nose to spite my face.
Yeah.
There's good business in repairing tools. Because like I say, I've been in places that have actually, their stampers, national or international companies that have better tooling rooms as far as equipment than we have. Mm-hmm. But they send their tools to us to be worked on. So that's basically because we have the expertise and the workforce to do what they can't do in house, not because they don't have the equipment, but because they don't have the personnel. Mm-hmm. To answer your question, we really don't have a prototype customer. Mm-hmm. We have a good mix of people who have new builds. There's a lot of the large programs are gone. Those, because of the savings that's seen, do go offshore. We used to build massive automotive programs. We don't do that anymore. Not necessarily because we don't want to, but just because they're not out there.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of repair work. I look at it as like a brick wall. The new die builds are the brick, and the repairs and the engineering changes and the maintenance is the mortar that holds it together. Mm-hmm. So I have to have both. I have to have a mix of brick and mortar in order to maintain a strong business. And so we appreciate both. We seek both out, and we're actually very good at both. We are a full service place. We can take your project from design all the way through production and anywhere in between.
And to that point, if you're listening, if you're speaking to someone in the industry, in the space, can you speak to our capabilities, like specifically, like for instance, we're getting a new laser. What will that be able to do? Just if there's someone who's an industry tire kicker looking for a new shop, is there anything we'd like to highlight here?
Sure. And again, I'll say it again, it's full service. I'm working on a project now where they're asking me to give them a quote on designing the tool, building the tool, and running production on the tool for a 5-year period. And so we would be responsible for its design, its construction, its production, its maintenance, and all of the things that are in between that. So we have
there's great value in that too, I would say. Yeah. We benefit Wall Control with that same sort of thing, because if you piecemeal it, everybody's pointing the finger at the other place. Oh, they designed it wrong. They built it wrong. They ran it wrong. And so if it's all in one place, there's no one to blame. Like you get it well taken care of.
Right. If you're simply a stamping facility and the die breaks, now you have to send it somewhere mm-hmm. to get it fixed. That somewhere is under our same roof. So we're able to do everything from its design to its production. To that end, we have CNC CAD capabilities, CAD design, CAM for manufacturing, again, CNC mills, boring mills with very large reach on horizontal. We have wire EDM machines, of course, all your conventional machines. And then, as you mentioned, the 5-axis lasers. The newest one, which will be here this year, is fiber optic 5-axis. Tremendous speeds. I can't believe how fast these things actually run and cut metal. In fact, there are places that use them as trim tools as opposed to buying dies.
Yeah.
We're excited about that. That, especially with the heavy industry that's come down here, and Georgia has now got Caterpillars down here. There's Yamaha Kubota and Kubota plants. There's all these things that are regional to the Southeast where volumes are not huge, but parts are. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to tool those. You want to just be able to 5-axis laser them. As far as the capabilities, we go across the board with our capabilities. And then experience, I would say that, like for myself, I've been in tool and die. Actually, I started in high school. Mm-hmm. I'm one of those guys who I was driving a truck. I went to Georgia Tech to learn to be an engineer. About the time they realized they didn't want me, I realized I didn't want them anymore. Mm-hmm. So we reached an agreement and parted ways. And I went straight back into engineering and tool. And I've been there for at that place doing engineering and design for 43 years. There's not many things in the industry that I've not seen. I'm not going to say I know it all. I learn something new every day. But the people that we have around us, there's vast knowledge of tool and die. I feel like we can, even if we don't do your program or your project, we can offer you opinions or advice or direction on it. You don't have to buy something from us in order to call us and ask us a question.
Yeah. And we do little to huge, all the way from little, like literal bug deflector clips to the front of school buses, anything there and in between. Thanks for coming on and chatting.
Sure.
How can people find you if they're looking to get work quoted or if they're curious about employment?
Yeah, a couple of things. First, I want to thank you guys for being a great customer. We certainly appreciate our partnership with Wall Control. You have grown to become one of our largest customers. Very good people to work with, very easy to deal with. And we
try to not kick the bear, so to speak, I guess.
We love the product line. We love the opportunity to be your stamper. So we thank you for that. If you're trying to get a hold of us, DeKalb Tool and Die is our name. You can find us on the web at www.dekalbtool.com.
And we got a brand new website, or you guys do, that just launched this week. So
yeah, it needs some tweaks, but it's up. So
it's more modern. It's definitely better.
It's DeKalbTool.com. You can reach me at rgrove, RGROVE. At DeKalbTool.com. Our phone number is 770-938-5605. And if you can't reach me, you can reach out to Mr. Wall Storage.
Mm-hmm. And, I can get you pointed in the right direction.
Exactly. If his stuff's in the press, you probably won't tell me until after his stuff's done.
Yeah. I'll just keep an eye out.
Exactly. But we'd appreciate to hear from anybody who's looking, has tooling needs, or if you're, again, a young person listening and you're not sure what your future holds career-wise, but you're willing to work, come see us.
Sounds good. I appreciate it. I want to take one little moment here at the end to also draw folks' attention to another podcast called Masters of Home Service. It's done by Jobber. So if you're a solopreneur, entrepreneur, have any sort of home service business, I know we have a lot of listeners that are professional organizers, garage installers. I would encourage you to check out their podcast, because yours truly is a guest on 4 of their episodes that'll be coming out this season. Check them out wherever you get podcasts, tune in. That's a little bit different conversation than what we're typically always talking about. Wall Control or a partner here, but there I'm talking about tips and tricks for business. how to deal with inflation, pricing, that sort of thing. Yeah, check that out as that rolls out throughout the year. And I think that'll do it for today. Thanks for coming on, Dad. And we'll see you back in the office in a little bit.
Thank you for joining us. Organization Conversation is brought to you by Wall Control, a family-owned and operated producer of best-in-class wall-mounted organizers for your home or business, made right here in the USA. To learn more, go to wallcontrol.com.